Today's episode of the Meet and Greet Barbecue podcast is brought to you by AOS Outdoor Kitchens. They are the South's leading outdoor kitchen design and installation specialists.
Hey, Dan here for the Meet and Greet Barbecue podcast. Just a quick message. This is part one of two of our episodes with Dan from Urban Streetery. It was such a fantastic conversation, and some of the things that we talked about meant that we didn't want to lose any of it in the editing, so we've kept all of it in, but split into two parts. This is part one of two, and I hope you enjoy. Welcome to another episode of the Meet and Greet Barbecue podcast. This episode, we are speaking to Dan from Urban Streetery. Bit of a warning here, it's a fantastic episode, and there's a little bit of swearing in it. So if you're listening around little ears, maybe thinking about listening to it when you're by yourself. But some of the things that Dan's talking about are so important, we didn't want to cut any of that content at all. It's a fantastic episode. I hope you love it as much as we did recording it. Please do like, subscribe, and review this podcast. It really helps us get the word of the podcast out there and helps people find us. That does make a big difference, particularly if you give us 5 stars. Without much further ado, here's Dan.
Well, welcome to the podcast, Dan, from Urban Eatery. How are you doing today?
Yeah, cracking, mate. Really, really good, mate. Busy with bits and pieces going on. This first weekend of this month that I haven't had anything on. So it's quite nice to actually just chill with a beer and chat to you guys.
That's the definition of chilling, is it? Coming onto a podcast to answer loads of questions for us.
Well, we're talking about barbecue and drinking beer, mate.
So for anyone that doesn't know who you are, tell our listeners who Dan is.
I am Dan from Urban Streetery. So I've been a chef for 21 years, coming up to 22 years. Urban Streetery started as a street food stall about 5 years ago. It was sort of like a side hustle that was alongside my job as a development chef. Where I come out of restaurants, I was still missing that buzz of a service. And I loved doing, it was a taco stall. So I loved doing Mexican food, but with a twist. I was doing global flavours on tacos, because I see the taco as a plate, a medium plate. So that started, and I was doing some street food stalls on base down in West Sussex. So I was doing stalls in Brighton, stuff like Majors Market, things like that, farmers markets. Then lockdown happened, and the sort of street food stuff knocked on the head. That's when I started off my Instagram account, or started building my Instagram account, but it's more into barbecue. I've always had a passion for barbecue and cooking over fire. But it really grew, especially in that first lockdown where we had decent weather. And having fun with the kids, so just being out in the garden, lighting a fire. At the time, I had an offset. So I was doing long, low and slow cooks, really getting back into the barbecue stuff, and it built and built and built. Then I went back to work, and people wanted to eat my barbecue food more than the street food stuff. So I started doing events and catering for weddings and catering for parties. And that's where I decided that's where it was going to go at the time. It was a lot better doing events, so because we know exactly how much money was coming in, and how many were catering for, so there was no waste. As a chef, I'm a big, big purveyor of waste, using waste food. I hate seeing food go to waste. So seeing anything that I could use anywhere else, I would. But when you do your own taco stall sort of thing, and you in the heat of summer, you can't really use a lot, so it was criminal to see the stuff being thrown away. So it was nice then to go into doing event catering instead of markets, which was a big, big push for me, alongside the full-time job, which is I'm the head chef of the Body Shop head office down in Littlehampton. So I cater, we cater for between, well, at the moment, not many, but between anywhere between 100 and 250 people a day, Monday to Friday. So it gives me a chance to do my barbecue stuff on the outside. So that's sort of me in a nutshell, really.
And obviously, in your years of experience and you, being a chef, had barbecue kind of played a role in your career as a chef? Had you ever done much outside of the kitchen?
It wasn't, not really, to be honest. So my first job was working in a Mexican restaurant in Worthing, and I sort of, that's where I got the love for the sort of Mexican food. And then me and my wife traveled around Mexico, really fell in love with it then. But my background is mainly fine dining. Mm-hmm. And I think I sort of was almost like rebelling from fine dining, going to cooking in over fire, but it was that refined plating that I was doing for so long in my career. But some of my stuff is now, I'm taking all of my experiences and using to cook over fire. So everything from the tacos to doing some fine dining plating. So I was lucky enough to be in the Globe Baltic competition. And I got right down to the semi-finals. And one of the rounds was creating a meal under 20 quid, but I decided to push myself and do a fine dining. And that's, I don't know if you guys saw a couple of dishes I did there, was sort of like everything cooked over fire, but plated in a fine dining way. So I did a mackerel dish, a reverse chuck steak, and pineapple with a burnt brown bread ice cream. But it was all sort of influences from my fine dining career. But yeah, I didn't really, the only thing we really used barbecue wise was we had two huge great big griddles for food and steaks in a couple of the pubs that I sort of ran. But nowhere to the extent that you've seen what I do now, cooking on the fire cage, cooking on the Kamados and things like that. Looking back, I wish that I'd pushed it a little bit more, especially when I was running kitchens. It would have been nice to have that influence. But where the kitchens were set, there was no way that we could have gone out and done barbecue food for the restaurant.
What I love about everything that we see about your Instagram and what drew me to your page originally when I was first kind of more getting Instagram and trying to get inspired is how colourful your Instagram page is. You know, if you're on kind of just looking through the barbecue community and scrolling through, as lovely as the food looks, it's the same sort of dark husky colour or kind of the reds and things. But yeah. Your page is a shock of colour, which is fantastic. Is that conscious? How does that work?
No, that's nice to see. Really. That's how my food works. I love when I start plating and designing food, like dishes, menus, I look at colour, texture, and taste in that order, really, because if it takes you by the eye, you want to eat it. Mm-hmm. If it's got lots of different textures on there, you want to eat it. It's not just one plain, boring, monotonous plate of food. And then the flavour will come because over the years, I've got the experience of the know-how what flavours go together. There's times where I want to push the boat, and there's things that I'll put together where people go, are you sure that that's right? And I was like, yeah, trust me. But I get it a lot that people say, are you using like the filters? Are you making your food look better? But no, that is just generally, I try and make it look visually stunning. Because at the end of the day, you guys aren't eating my food. Instagram's a tool for me for my business. And if I can get that reaction, I get the bookings as well. Mm-hmm. So if I can make that single plate of barbecue food stand out on Instagram without any filters or cheating, then yeah, that's what I do. But yeah, I've always stood by those three things of the colour, texture and taste, not the flavour. That's what makes up a great plate of food. Barbecue food as well. I'm not, I like eating American style barbecue, but it, like you said, it is the same thing over and over again, the same mm-hmm. sweet sauces, same mahogany.
Yeah.
I mean, don't get me wrong, it's beautiful. It's what you'd want to eat. But when, like you said, on Instagram, it's the same thing over and over again. That's why I like to push the boat and do something completely different.
Mm-hmm. I was about to say, there's actually not a huge amount of American barbecue on your page at all, is it? There's more.
No, I sort of do American barbecue more for parties at home. So,
yeah.
Like around my birthday and stuff. My birthday's in June, so we'll always have, there's usually a football or rugby going on around then. So we'll have, I'll stick on some brisket or some ribs or something like that. I still try and push the boat with the flavours and the sauces myself, but that's the sort of time when I would, sort of family gatherings would become sort of that American style barbecue. Whereas my career and everything that I try to do on here, I want to try and be different, so I do stand out a little bit. Where I sort of push the sort of Mexican, the Korean, more so Indian stuff that I've been doing recently, and getting to push that out there on different platforms such as this, such as the stuff down at SoCal where I've been doing the masterclasses. Mm-hmm. Working with Russ and Tom and Don with Rusty Barbecue has massively helped me gain bookings and push myself through what's been a pretty shitty couple of years, to be honest.
Yeah,
definitely. So what would, if I was coming to you for, to cater for me for an event, you know, what would we expect from you?
Definitely colour, texture and taste. but what I tend to do is I build a bespoke menu with you.
Okay.
So if you wanted American barbecue, we would do American barbecue, but I would do it with a twist. So I would do something like, if you wanted ribs, for instance, I would take the ribs, but instead of giving you a sticky sort of oversweet sauce, I'd look at doing something like a fermented chili and blackberry sauce, something like that, that's got that sweetness, but it's got that kick that will go, oh, this isn't a traditional rib, this is something different. I generally work with the client to see what they want. At the end of the day, I'm cooking it, but they're the ones eating it and sharing it around with their friends. It's what the customer wants, and I'll make it sort of like what they want, but take it to that next level. And at the moment, I'm sort of traveling with the fire cage, trying to get it into vans and trying to get it in and out of a van myself is quite tricky.
it's not a small piece of kit, is it?
It's not the smallest piece of kit in the world, no. It's not the lightest piece of kit in the world either. I found out last month, yeah. I want to do is smaller parties. So I did a party last weekend for 70. That will probably be the last big one that I do. Just purely for the fact when you've got, I did one at the start of the month for 8 people, and you can have more control over the menu. Because when you've got a big function, you can't please everyone. You can please the people that are asking for the menu, but out of that 70, you're likely to upset 10, 15 people because there's not going to be something on the menu that they like. If you have small groups of, say, the one that I did with 8, you give them the menu, they show their friends the menu, and everyone agrees on it, and you've got 8 happy people. And the other thing is you've also got the communication and banter that you can have with them, plating up in front of them. You have that more hands-on experience and engagement with them, watching the chef in front of you. And like you guys, when we went down to Sizzle Fest, everyone's in awe of a chef working in front of them. You just fixated on what they're doing, and that's what that sort of showmanship that I've got from working in the diner at the body shop, of speaking to people, telling them about food, showing my passion. And people love that, and that's where this is going with. I've got a few more bookings this year so far. Couple of big ones, big names that I can't mention, but and we had a chat about it as a nice big rugby player that I was looking at Marcus Borden to get me the gig. So That I'm very much looking forward to. We've got Sizzlefest nice. Mark II this year. So watch that. There could be some stuff with the Rusty guys down there. And hopefully, fingers crossed, there'll be some plans. I'm hoping to have a venue that I can open myself as a barbecue store that will have a chef's table inside there. So there'll be sort of two evenings a month where I'll do one of my events where it'll be, I don't know, let's say a Mexican night, stick on the Mexican route, where I'll do four or five different dishes, tasting menus, over fire, with cocktails, and then throughout the week there'll be masterclasses and things like that. That's my dream anyway. That's the goal for the end of the year.
Sounds exciting. I couldn't agree more around the kind of the smaller intimate groups and the watching a chef work. I mean, one of the best dining experiences I had was actually down in Worthing. Well, no, it wasn't. Horsham, where the it was like a shit. Huh? Yes, the pass.
It's not far from me. Yeah, it's incredible there.
It was. I think it was a 9-course taster menu, but you're obviously sat right in front of the chefs, aren't you? And you're literally seeing them. They're bringing it to your table. They're talking to you about that. And again, it's fascinating to watch artistry.
The guys, when you get to that level, the passion that comes through, it's a bit like me. That's the sort of food I was doing at the start of my career. But I decided to leave the restaurant world to have a family because I was working 6 days a week, 17 hours a day, and there was no time to have kids or even thinking about kids at the time. But that was when I decided enough of this. But that's why I wanted to get I had to get back into it somehow. Mm-hmm. It's a strange world, chefing, of catering in the whole hospitality. When you're seeing the people that you work with more than you see your own family, they become your family. And you lose friends, you lose sleep, you lose years on your life. But there's something about it that keeps you wanting more. Mm-hmm. And that's where this had to come back. That always had to come full circle of me doing something like this, of going back to my roots, of doing fine dining or doing something that involved me having a service and not just Monday to Friday, finishing at 3 o'clock. That's why it's sort of a once a month thing at the moment, once or twice a month, where I can just go out there and go crazy with the food that I do. Plating up on tables and things like that. when I did that masterclass at Soquel, people were looking at me at the start going, what's he doing? Why is he just chucking stuff on the table? And by the end of it, they're like, that's art. I don't even want to touch it. It's like, no, please do it. It's like, you need to eat it now. It's still hot. But that's what I want to do, that wow factor of taking barbecue food that's not tradition. And the sort of, I suppose you could call it, is British barbecue, UK barbecue, because there's so many influences in this country, whether it's Indian, whether it's Chinese, Mexican now, Thai, standard British, taking a roast dinner and putting it on the barbecue. And we have all of these different people now that are coming through and sort of purveyors of the barbecue world in this country. Marcus, people like Elke, Genevieve Taylor, people like that. And then you've got the youngsters coming through. I mean, some of those kids, like Alfie and Aston, the stuff that he's putting out, he's 14 years old, and it's like, that's when I started my career. And his food is, I was washing up and making guacamole every week. He's looking out people to go into a Michelin star restaurant. I mean,
they're both so talented, aren't they?
Like, they're an incredible pair of them. But I can only see British barbecue going up because of those guys, because of the youngsters coming through that will then take on the sort of next generation. And it's an exciting time in this country for food, not just barbecue, but just food in general. The restaurants that we have in this country now are completely different from 20 years ago. Mm-hmm. And you see more and more, not just barbecue, but cooking over fire in places now, due to companies like Savage creating these fantastic bits of equipment that now go in professional kitchens, not just in the garden as well. And it's exciting as a chef to see that, that people like me and other chefs can influence others in not just cooking of what people generally associate with barbecue, whether it's a burger or a sausage. That's what British has always been classed as, barbecue and burnt sausages, raw burger, and a naff bit of chicken on the barbecue. That's always what our country was associated with. But now people are breaking that stigma.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely.
With platforms like this and Instagram and things like that, that's only going to boost it even further.
Do you think you would ever go back with, obviously, all the, you know, the passion that you've got, A, being a chef, but obviously it's clearly, you know, your passion about barbecue and taking barbecue to the next level. Would you ever, you mentioned about potentially opening your own barbecue school. Do you think you'd ever go to, as far as opening your own barbecue restaurant?
No.
Okay. Didn't even think about it.
No, I'm out of the restaurant game. Okay. I think if I was to go back in, it would destroy me. I'm only 35, but I've got the back of a 70-year-old and the hairline of a 60-year-old. I'd love to do something where it's during the week, where I could sort of share that passion that I have with others, showing them how to cook, showing them how to start a fire from the ground up, really. But doing that different style of barbecue. So teaching them the Mexican style, where you can build a pit underground and wrap things in banana leaves and cook it for hours and hours and hours. Not just a offset brisket.
Mm-hmm.
I want to be a different barbecue school, or sort of fire cooking school. Because there's nothing down here, really. There's nothing in Sussex. There's where I am anyway, there's a couple sort of good 45 minutes hour away from here, but there's nothing in this local area. We've got some fantastic produce down here. We've got the South Downs, and there's sort of nothing in between. It would be nice to have something sort of where we can take the produce from the Downs, say some nice lamb or some deer running around. Or we've got the beauty of the, I'm literally about 5 minutes from the seafront. So
there's nice.
Because that, the way I look at it is each day is a different lesson. So Friday would be like a fishy Friday day, where it's a big fish feast, cooking oysters and scallops, throwing the embers, taking some locally caught mackerel and hanging them on the fire cage, things like that, where it's completely different. And hopefully getting my name out there for it.
If you've been looking or thinking about an outdoor kitchen, then look no further than AOS Outdoor Kitchens.
They are the South's leading outdoor kitchen design and installation specialists.
Their extensive showroom is based just outside Bournemouth on the Dorset-Hampshire border, and as well as numerous in-store displays, also features a live outdoor kitchen where they cook every week on Kamado grills, pizza ovens, and all filmed and shown on YouTube.
They offer a wealth of knowledge on how to transform your patio into the most incredible outdoor dining area, with styles and options to suit every budget. And you can guarantee they will be able to create something perfectly suited to you and your home.
They stock and supply everything that you're going to need for outdoor cooking, including barbecues, Kamado ovens, pizza ovens, outdoor fridges, and every accessory that you would need to become the ultimate outdoor chef.
So if you want to make yourself the envy of your friends and neighbours, get in touch with them today to arrange a consultation and take the first step in transforming your back garden into the most incredible entertainment space.
Visit aoskitchens.co.uk.
Something that excited me when we were earlier in the conversation, actually, and you were talking about doing a twist, and you mentioned fermentation. It's not something we've really talked about much on the podcast, but like, what that brings to barbecue can be mind-blowing because it'll cut through a lot of the more fatty flavors that are coming through. There's so much more excitement and depth of flavor, like sauerkraut and barbecue goes amazingly well. Kimchi and barbecue can do amazing things. How, if someone wanted to kind of walk into fermentation and want to kind of mix it with some of the stuff they're cooking, where would they even start? And how would you think about the different things you could ferment to pair with what you're cooking on the barbecue?
I think you hit the nail on the head, mate. Straight away, if someone is a beginner, sauerkraut or a kimchi on top of a hot dog, is that's the way you can elevate your basic barbecue. Taking that sweet, salty, sour, all those high flavors, heat, that will just lift, even if you wanted to, and it's a swear word, but a Richmond sausage. It was
oh my goodness.
A family barbecue. You go to your family barbecue and they've got Richmond, packet of Richmond sausages, walls bangers in the corner. Have a pouch of kimchi in your pocket ready. You'd forget about that Richmond sausage straight away because the kimchi would just lift anything you're eating because you've got that, like I said, sourness, you've got the bitterness, but you've got the heat and the sweet that goes with it as well. You've got crunch. But you can ferment. I made a range of fermented chili sauces just with some kilner jars, some salt, some water, and I had a glut of chilies. I made, a habanero, a lemon drop, and a jalapeno, all fermented chili sauces. Nice. And after 2 weeks, give them a blend, and you've got perfect chili sauce. Leave it longer and it's hotter and more depth, rounded flavour. But there's other things. You can just ferment some pineapple and then finish it on the barbecue. And you've got those almost, when pineapple and things like mango ferment, it almost goes alcoholic.
Mm-hmm.
You almost have that sort of rummy, punchy flavour that comes out of it because the sugars are starting to ferment in them, just basically making alcohol. But then you finish it on the barbecue and caramelize it. It's like taking, hanging on the cage, I did a pineapple that I think a lot of the guys that have got the cages hang a pineapple for sort of 6-7 hours. I did one where I sped it up by peeling it and then spraying it with a sherry and muscovado sugar spritz.
Oh, that sounds nice.
But if you fermented it, you wouldn't need the alcohol because the alcohol is coming out of the pineapple itself.
Mm-hmm.
And then that would caramelize and you would get those sort of dark brown sugary flavors, sort of molasses flavors that are caramelizing to it whilst it's cooking. Fermentation is brilliant. It's a new elevated level of flavor.
I also want to experiment with kind of almost cooking some of the more Eastern European type stews and things on the barbecue, like doing like a bigosh type thing on there, I think would be absolutely amazing. And just using fermentation and barbecue in a different way that people don't think, because we often say you can cook anything on the barbecue that you would in an oven, but it's trying to be a bit more experimental with it. Is that with your training, is that the other exciting thing about barbecue, is adding kind of the smoke to some of the items you do, which you wouldn't normally get?
Yeah, definitely. And watching some of the, I mean, there's so many decent things on Netflix now. The guy out in Australia that you take caviar and you would put it into and you'd smoke, finish it on the barbecue, on a leaf, on a cooling rack, just to get that extra added level of flavour of the smoke. I have found that samphire is something that we used to use in restaurants all the time, whether it would be for a garnish for an oyster to sit on top of. Not many people at the time were eating it. It was used as a sort of a bed to hold on a seashell. But when we did start using it, it was either used raw or it was just blanched. And I thought, I don't know, let's get a sieve and cook it straight in the embers. And when you char it and you get smoke, then you add the salt and the sweetness from the samphire, it really brings on a new level of flavour. And taking things like fine ingredients and adding fire to it is a new way that I'm learning myself with things. So things like cooking scallops in the shell directly on the coals. That was new to me. I saw the thing DJ Barbecue did. Mm-hmm. I think he just did it with some chili and some white wine and things like that. And I changed it up and I did I like using fruity IPAs in a lot of my bits and pieces. Again, it's almost a type of fermentation or pickling. So I do a lot with my Mexican stuff, like IPA pickled onions, where I'll use a tiny rebel or a mild beer pogo because they have passion fruit, mango, pineapple flavours that work so well with the sweeter meat, the fatty meats, like you said, cutting through those fats. And I put some of the mild beer pogo, which is passion fruit and mandarin beer, in with the scallops and Thai chilies, and with the smoke and then the burnt butter that went over the top, the flavour was just immense. And it's just ways of lifting things and all the different levels of flavour that you get from the smoke, the heat, the sweet. I like them using the sort of five sort of ways that the Thais use, the sweet, sour, hot, bitter, and sour, where it all just becomes a rounded flavour. And it's all sort of equal quantities, whereas it's not one level of heat where you can't taste anything else, or it's one over sweet sticky rib. It's that rounded flavours that work so well. And that's where I like to bring all those influences together.
And where do you normally find your source of inspiration for creating new ideas, and certainly for the, you know, from a catering point of view, when you're presenting potential menus to your clients, you know, where do you get that source of inspiration from?
But I use inspiration from everywhere, whether it's cookbook, whether it's program, past experiences from the restaurants that I've worked in. So from about the age of 19, I've kept notebooks next to it, or now I've got notebooks on my phone, but that shows how old I am. I have notebooks next to the bed that, as a chef, you hardly sleep. It's a common thing. You know who's a chef when they're walking down the street. They're either a chef or they're a drug addict. they've got this disheveled look in their face that after a 17-hour shift and you know you're back in at 7 o'clock in the morning, you don't want to be late, you hardly sleep. And your brain's always going overdrive. And when you've got the passion for it, you're just constantly thinking. So I've got notebooks. I've probably got near on 40 notebooks of different ideas. And now I've got an Evernote that's filled up. I've got my iPhone notebooks filled up. I've just constant ideas that if I'm down the beach and I suddenly think, oh, hold on, that's my sort of go-to place if I need inspiration, or I've got a sort of like a, almost like writer's block. I'll go and sit down on the beach with a coffee and it will start flowing again. And then all of a sudden, all of these things will start coming in my head where I've got one ingredient, and then I'll go for the ingredient and I'll go for which cuisine and then what goes with what. And then all of a sudden I've got a plate of food, and then in my head I know how I'm placing it. And then I'll do a diagram of how that's been plated and what it's going with. That's where it sort of comes from. But I have inspiration from travelling, from my kids, everything these days. What I've seen on Instagram, taking ideas that people have had, and just, it's massive now with Instagram, TikTok, Facebook, all of these platforms that we're all on. Even the smaller accounts now have got some of the greatest ideas, like some of these sources that are coming through. One of the companies that Russ is lucky to work with now, Waz's Barbecue, has got a hibiscus barbecue sauce, which I've never seen a hibiscus barbecue sauce out there. And it's one of those flavours that will work wonders with especially pork and chicken. It will work brilliantly, and I'm really looking forward to trying them. But taking the different things that are out there, using coffee, but using coffees of different origins, so not just a ground coffee or a rub. Go and finding a coffee that tastes of bitter chocolate and almonds, and putting that into a rub, making a mole that way. I'll find inspiration from anything. If someone gave me a menu and said, look, I want a Mexican four-course dinner, I'll give them four or five different menus for them to pick from, and work with them. So if they are big lamb fans, I will make sure that each one of those menus has got a lamb dish on there, but using a different cut, ranging from the cheapest cut up to the most expensive, and with different things going on that will wow everyone, really.
You talk a lot about cooking for other people, and that's your passion, feeding other people, making them happy and experimenting for them. But if you were cooking for yourself, what would you cook as your like dream barbecue meal, start to finish?
That's a cracking question. So at the moment, my favourite, I don't know if you guys have listened to the podcast, Off Menu podcast.
Yeah, yeah. We're coming for you, Gamble. We're coming for you.
I've only recently discovered that, and I sit and try and work out my menu, and it changes weekly. But given that that's the sort of your ultimate menu, I've always gone with the death row meal. Mm-hmm. And I've always gone, I would say my starter would probably be something like salt and pepper squid.
Nice.
And again, that done on the barbecue now is something that tastes absolutely incredible. But I just love the flavours that come through it. Again, that flavour, that sort of different salty heat element, sweetness from the squid. You've got sort of like a nice garlic aioli with it, a nice bit of lemon. You can't go wrong with that. A nice glass of white wine. Main course, it changes all the bloody time. I said about not having ribs and sweet ribs, but there's nothing better, in my opinion, as yourself, just a plate of really good cooked ribs or a bloody good steak. And then experimenting. I've been experimenting a lot. So through the early stages of my fine dining, I was a pastry chef. And there's not too many, especially if you search for barbecue desserts, there's a very, very, very slim amount of desserts. You would usually find something along the lines of a banana wrapped in tinfoil with some chocolate, a s'more, or something like a sponge cake that's been cooked in a Kamado. And don't get me wrong, they taste incredible. But I've wanted to push that recently. I've been doing a lot of research and looking at cooking berries and fruit in the embers and what flavours they will take on from different woods and things like that. Trying to cook pastry on the barbecue, but that's a very hard thing to do, because you've got to get it at the right temperature so that your pastry and your butter's not melting when you make pastry. So that's what I'm experimenting with at the moment, is sort of opening a new portfolio for dessert. I did a mango upside down cake last week, which worked well. It could be better. The caramel didn't work it as well as it should have done.
It did look like a rose, though. You know, it did, yeah. Don't be too harsh on yourself.
It did look pretty, and it tasted all right. I think that's where, as a chef, and I'm not a perfectionist. I just want that plate of food to be the best it can be. It's not perfect, but you want to eat it, and you go back and go, yeah, I want to make that again. I want to make that again, but change it. So I want to put almost like a passion fruit drizzle through the sponge as it comes off. So you've got different flavour elements as you eat it, instead of just mango on the top, sponge at the bottom. I want to put something else added to it. So doing development on desserts at the moment is something that excites me, because like I said, it's 3 out of the 8 years I was doing, or maybe even longer than that, I was sort of full-on pastry chef. So bringing fire elements into pastry is a new thing for me. And a new thing for a lot of people, I think. So yeah, you'll be seeing a lot more dessert-based barbecue on my page soon.
Nice. Owen and I have just been talking about this the whole time. You did brownies for the first time the other day, didn't you, Owen?
I did.
Yeah, that sounds incredible. Brownies on the barbecue are just so good, man.
Yeah, it was one of Marcus's recipes. So it was ancho chili brownies. Yeah, they're really, really, really tasty.
I was lucky.
Promise, because I've never done them before, I didn't know what to compare them to, but they tasted nice.
I was lucky enough to try Sue Stoneman's brownie on the barbecue at Sizzlefest. And I think that's what got me back into looking at pastry on the barbecue, because the sort of chocolate took on a different level of flavour from the charcoal and the wood she was using.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's where I want to experiment with. Again, a bit like I said with the moles, finding the coffee, finding different chocolates that got different flavour elements to them, where that smoke element could be sort of like that extra ingredient.
Mm-hmm.
Whether it's an applewood smoked chocolate tart or something along those lines. It's exciting to be able to do stuff like that.
That's it for another episode of the Meet and Greet Barbecue podcast. It was great to talk to Dan from Urban Streetery. I think there were some great tips. As ever, we want to hear from you. Tell us what to talk about on the podcast, what's important to you around barbecue. Get in touch with us through the usual channels, email meetandgreetbarbecuepodcast@gmail.com, the social channels at Meet and Greet Barbecue Podcast. If you haven't done so already, join our newly launched Facebook group, the Meet and Greet Barbecue Podcast group, where you can post in, get involved, share your creations on the barbecue. And until next week, keep on grilling. Today's episode is brought to you by AOS Kitchens, the South's leading outdoor kitchen design and installation specialists.